Petersburg, Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, helping clients find out how to protect any valuable asset from stamp or teacup collections to houses, boats of all sizes, and everything in between. Plenty of information from the local agents is available at Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, 772-3858.
Meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mark?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Here.
John?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, it's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. Before we move on to the approval of minutes for our February 3rd meeting and amendment or approval of today's meeting, I'd like to bring up that we've advertised for filling the vacancy on the assembly. It's been 2 weeks since our last meeting, not quite 2 weeks, but it would be 2 weeks next Monday, I guess. We're having this meeting earlier so we can meet with the architect and get some numbers for the design on the police station to bring to Juneau next week. So if it's all right with the assembly, we've got two names submitted to us interested for this position to be filled on the assembly till October of next year, of this year, and when the next election is. Jay Stanton Gregor has put in his name, and Al Dwyer. And if it's okay with the assembly, I'd like to do a closed ballot and try to seat one of those people at this time. So is there any objection by assembly members? I see Al isn't here. I was hoping he would be. I didn't call him. So if he gets seated, he'll probably be at the next meeting, I would think. So this seems like an appropriate time to do that, if everybody's okay with it. Okay, so do you have a little note, scratch papers for it?
I think I gave everyone scratch paper, yes.
Oh, yeah. So just write the name down of the either Al Dwyer or Jay Stanton Gregor, and we need four votes for one or the other. And we'll see if we can do this without it taking too long. The suspense is killing me. Okay, can you give us the tally, please?
5-1.
Okay, thank you. Jay, would you mind coming up and being sworn in by the clerk? And I believe your seat will be over here where Mr. Hogue is, to the right of the manager.
Where do I got to go?
You'll be right there. Hang on. Okay. Put your step down and raise your right hand for me, please.
You bet.
Thank you. Jay, do you solemnly affirm that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the ordinances of the Petersburg Borough, and that you will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of assembly member for the Petersburg Borough, Alaska, to the best of your ability?
I do.
Thank you. I'll get your signature after the meeting.
Cool.
Thank you.
Give me just a minute. I'm going to give him a packet. Tell him.
Okay. All right. We'll let the manager brief him real quick, and we'll take a couple-minute break, and then we'll move forward. It's a pretty light agenda today. There's some things that might take some time, but it shouldn't be too bad. Hey, you ready to roll?
Ready to roll. Well, I did not plan on being seated today. I have a prior commitment at 2:45, so if we are running later, I will have to vacate with your permission, Mr.
Boy, if we're running that late.
<All the time>.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks. Thank you, sir,
for putting your name in. Okay, that brings us to, we need a motion for the approval of the meeting minutes from February 3rd of 2014.
So moved.
I'll second.
Is there a second? Moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Lagadakis to approve the meeting minutes of February 3rd, 2014. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, minutes are approved. And that brings us to today's meeting agenda. Is there any amendments for today's agenda? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by, I believe, Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Wallhooter to approve today's meeting agenda. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, today's meeting agenda is set. Public hearings and bid awards. Today we have a public hearing on Ordinance 2014-4, an ordinance providing for Title II elections of the Municipal Code and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. So is there anybody in the audience that would like to participate in this public hearing? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the next public hearing, and that is on Ordinance 2014-5. An ordinance providing for Title X Criminal Code of the Municipal Code and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. Anybody in the audience today like to speak to the Ordinance 2014-05? Okay, seeing none. That brings us to visitors' views related to the agenda. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak to any views related to today's agenda items? Okay, seeing none. Visitors' views unrelated to the agenda. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak to views unrelated to today's agenda? Seeing none, that brings us to board, commission, and committee reports. There is none listed. Nothing on the consent agenda, which brings us to report of other officers. And we have a report from Petersburg Economic Development Council, Liz Cabrera. She will update the assembly on PEDC activities.
I'm an officer.
Yeah, okay. Hey, wow.
Been promoted.
Did I misread that?
No, okay. You. I put it in the wrong spot.
Oh, I see what you're.
Yeah.
Got it.
Mike, could you grab the lights for me? Yeah, thank you.
Petersburg Economic Development Council, and I just wanted to give you an overview of our program of work and our activities from the last year and sort of into the next few months. This is a pretty quick overview, so if you have any questions, my office is directly across the hall from here, and I'm there just about every day, so feel free to stop by anytime or give a call. Or also, the city manager and Assemblymember Strand are members of the board of the PEDC, and so there are other resources for assembly members to talk to, as is Harbor Master Glo Wallen. So there's plenty of people around that.
You're avoiding the mic, Chillers.
Other people who are around that can answer a question. So let me get started. I'm not sure how I'm going to reach everything here. I wanted to start off with something that is a pet peeve on my part, which is people saying that something is economic development, even though it really may or may not be. The tough part about economic development is there really isn't an agreed upon definition among practitioners, but it's usually described in terms of specific goals and objectives like job creation or job retention. And down south, usually people who are economic development practitioners meet those goals by recruiting large companies into their state or into their municipality. So when you see an economic development council has a goal of creating 10,000 jobs, it's because, you know, their way of doing that is by bringing in Ford Motor Company and creating 10,000 jobs. We obviously don't take that approach here because it's not very likely that we're going to be able to attract a major manufacturer, or a major company to headquarter in Petersburg. So we do a more homegrown approach as far as our attempts to improve the economy. I think the important thing to remember when you talk about economic development is that it's not a thing necessarily, it's a process. And it's a process that has a lot of layers to it and involves government, involves the private sector, and people who are trying to promote and restructure the economy to try and create more business and engender more business in your community. The areas that we focus on, we try to encourage private sector investment, streamline the development process, provide skilled workforce for existing jobs, provide key infrastructure, and provide information about our community. And the way we do that, first of all, is we like to develop our own local businesses as opposed to recruiting from the outside. Key things in business development are access to capital, providing technical assistance to business, streamlining the development process, and making sure that they have a skilled workforce. Access to credit or capital, especially for startups, is a really difficult thing. The climate now with banks is such that, you know, a startup is having a hard time getting any kind of money. One of the programs that we're offering through PEDC is a partnership with Kiva Zip. This is for microfinancing. It's open to any small business, and it has a very minimal requirement to participate. Basically, it's a crowdfunding, which I'm not sure if all of you know what, you all know what crowdfunding is. So crowdfunding is basically people around the country lending money to someone through a website, and then the person runs their business, and after a certain amount, a term, they'll pay back the loan, and then those people who lent money get their money back. It's really like the popular thing in microfinance these days. PDC is a trustee of Kiva Zip. We just had our first borrower go online, and it's the FV Aurora, and it's a power troller who needed some capital to buy some gear, overhaul his boat, and we posted to the online website in December, and 18 days later, he'd raised $5,000, and we'll be paying that back starting in June. So it was a really successful campaign for him. And we're just starting to work with our second borrower. I think one of the neat things about it is not only can outside people lend money, but even within town, we can lend money and support our own businesses. So I'd like to see, I think that's a really neat aspect of it, where we'd like to all support a local business, but it's not always easy to do so. This way, you can spend $5 to support a local business, or up to $100 to support a local business, and it's pretty minimal risk. Yeah.
I just wanted to make one point on the Kiva Zip loan, is that I know that some of the investors in that process, and this may be of interest to folks, were international. They weren't all from the United States.
Wow. No, it's 123 people from around the world. Yeah. Most from the United States, but yeah, some from Europe and from Asia as well. So the website has a pretty broad following, and these are just people who are interested in doing good things and are interested in supporting businesses around the country. So we're pretty excited to be part of this. We were the fifth business from Alaska on that website. So we also offer technical assistance through our partnership with the Alaska Small Business Development Center, and we try to offer a variety of workshops once or twice a year, and these are the ones that we've offered in the last couple of years. And in the next, actually tomorrow, starting and operating a specialty food business, which is being done with the university, and probably in the next month or so, we'll do another profit mastery class, which is a financial management workshop for business owners. One-stop shopping is something that we do with the borough. When there is someone who is interested in developing property, we work with the individual and convene a meeting of all the key department heads, and that way they can talk about all of the issues related to developing a piece of property and get questions answered. And it just saves a lot of time for them to have to go from department to department, to have everyone in the same room having the conversation, identifying what the information needs are, getting answers right there, figuring out who knows what and who they need to contact. And we've done that just once so far with John Glenn with Stikine River, but it worked really well. So I I think it's something that, you know, if we have an occasion to do it again, it was pretty successful. I think it saves a lot of time and energy, and he seemed pretty happy with the results of it. Workforce development, we've had the Alaska Department of Labor come to town a couple of times at our invitation. Last time we focused on the registered apprenticeship program, and as a result, we had three registered apprentices sign up in Petersburg in refrigeration and HVAC. It's a program that's not very well known or exploited here in town, so we were pretty excited to get three apprentices here, and we'll try and have them come back. They're not always easy to get to come to town. And then in just miscellaneous, working with businesses to direct them to available resources, you know, contacts that we have with agencies, write letters of support if they're seeking funding from a different agency, and just general information. The other thing on my area's emphasis was providing key infrastructure. Not all infrastructure is created equally. We'd like to focus on things that will generate new private sector investment. The two that we focused on is a community cold storage. It provides local processors with blast freezing capacity and storage capacity. Last year, we had over a million pounds go through the blast freezers with two primary tenants, Ocean Beauty and Tonka Seafoods. We had 110 businesses and individuals use the cold storage in the last 12 months. I think a great example of how the cold storage can be used to leverage private sector investment is Tonka Seafoods, really small company. They used all the freezing and storage capacity at the cold storage to fill these really large value-added orders over the last couple of years. And as a result, they finally built up their business large enough where they were able to buy a much larger facility, and then really used continue to use the capacity at the cold storage to really expand what they can freeze and what they can hold. So if we could repeat that, you know, like 10 more times, that would be ideal. Our next project is that we're hoping to further along is a Scow Bay haulout to construct the basic infrastructure out there. Cost estimate's $3.5 million. Currently, we have an RFP out for ramp repair work, which is really just a stopgap measure to make sure that the ramp is still functional until we can pull it out and replace it. This year, we've also finally put together enough funds to pay for the next phase of design out there. And once we put the RFP out for that, there'll be public notice for public hearings, so to provide input into that design process. We haven't awarded the contract for that yet, so. Another aspect of our efforts is trying to understand what's happening with the local economy, and we do that through a biennial economic trends report. And generally what we do is compare our local indicators with local indicators from state and regional sources. For instance, this is gross sales, and this is all City of Petersburg because it's before the borough was formed. And you can see here comparison between real, which is inflation-adjusted dollars, versus nominal, which is the ones that are not inflation-adjusted. So by showing the real, you're eliminating price increases because of inflation. So it gives you a truer number of comparing apples to apples across time. So, you know, basically what this is showing you is sales in the city were pretty flat and have been pretty flat over the last few years. You can see a little dip as a result of the recession, mostly. And then a slight kind of uptick as we're kind of heading out of that. Employment figures, which we get from the Department of Labor, we have about 948 private sector jobs, which was a 2.4% increase over the previous year. You see a little bit of fluctuation, 3-4% year to year, and that's mostly based on seafood processors. And then when you take that out of the equation, there's a little bit more stability in the private sector. Private sector to public jobs split, and then the annual private sector wage is $31,365. We do an annual food cost survey just to see how we measure against other communities. Usually we're on the higher end of Southeast Alaska and of the smaller communities. And this is a little bit subjective because it really depends on, you know, when the stores increase their prices. It's a one-day food survey, so this is just a little snapshot. You know, on this day, here's what it costs to buy a week's worth of food for a family of four in these communities and where we fell into that category. But almost universally, we're about 20 to 30% above Anchorage prices. Also keep track of our population. Our median age is 41.4, which is significantly higher than the state median. So overall, we have a much older population. According to state estimates, we'll have 12% over 65 years old in the next few years. And since that always is an issue as far as school enrollment and just the overall population of town, a few years ago we did a survey, a local online survey, and asked how likely you are to recommend Petersburg as a place to visit, a place to live, and a place to do business. And we compared these results to a national small community index. So when it came to, you know, how likely are you to recommend Petersburg for visiting, it's the middle column, and our results are the ones in red. So while the standard index was 25%, ours was 71%. So we certainly encourage everybody to come visit Petersburg. On the left-hand side is the, do we encourage people to come live here? And the index is 24%, and Petersburg's was 0.8. So while we want you to visit, we don't want you to live here. Okay, and that's basically... Exactly. We want you to visit and spend, but we don't want you to stay. So, I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, it's kind of the, what we're projecting out there. We're not big promoters of encouraging people to move to Petersburg, at least based on this sample set. And I'll just point out the business one, you know, is below zero, and when the survey was done, it was right in the middle of the recession. But we are actually slightly less negative than the national standard on starting a business here. So when we got these results, and we'd heard from a lot of people that we don't do a very good job of promoting our community, we undertook a branding project and started doing a little bit of community marketing. We felt it was important to tell our story, to try and bring some outside dollars into our community, to let people know who we are and what we're all about, and that things actually do occur here, and it's a fun place to live, and you should consider it if you're moving to Alaska. I think our branding program has been really successful. I mean, you see the logo all over the place. I think it's harder. The hardest part of it is trying to maintain the standards and not have people go off in all sort of crazy ways and turn our logo into all sorts of different things that it shouldn't be. It just for FYI, it needs to stay exactly the way it is. We also received a small grant from the borough to put together a photo library, and we've been building that. We also started an electronic newsletter and have over 200 subscribers, and have partnered with the chamber to have people who request information from the chamber also have an option to subscribe to the newsletter, and that number is growing, so we're actually getting people outside of the borough receiving it. And a really disproportionate number of people in Norway get the newsletter, oddly enough. and we've gotten, as a result of our branding program, we've actually gotten national recognition. We were cited in the Kiplinger letter a couple years ago for having an exemplary community marketing program. And I probably get calls once a month from other communities asking how we did what we did and asking for a copy of our RFP and what we're up to and all that other stuff. We also do some co-op marketing, primarily with Wrangell and Prince of Wales. We go to what's called the Alaska Media Roadshow, which is put on by the state of Alaska, where we meet one-on-one with travel writers. And you can't see it very well, but if you caught the October issue of Alaska Airlines magazine, there was a story about Petersburg and Wrangell in there. And I was the one that never locked my car in the article. So that was a direct result of our attendance at the media roadshow. We've done Alaska Airlines magazine ad with the chamber and then some other co-op marketing. Mostly, it's pretty new for us, so part of what we're doing is testing out
which channels work best for us and see what kind of response we get them from them. So we're only doing things that we can really measure their responses on. Just in the last few months, this is where we've gotten press, usually, well, positive press about visiting here, or just something positive about our community. Obviously, Yachting Magazine, we got in there a couple times. Alaska Airlines in there, we've been in a couple times as well. So. I also do occasionally some grant writing and research for different organizations and departments. Most recently, I've been focusing on Mountain View Manor, and we've done a couple of grants there, replaced all the windows, and soon we'll have a wheelchair accessible van. And then the most recent one was to get some new totes for all the people asking for ice at the cold storage, and we'll hear about that. And then we do some research through our eCivis subscription that we got from the borough for different departments and then just nonprofits. And there you have it.
All right. Thanks, Liz. That was very informative. Any questions of Liz by the Assembly? Thanks, Liz.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
With the lights turned back on here. And the next item on the agenda is the mayor's report. We've already gone through the candidates for the position on the assembly and have appointed someone. And there's also a letter of interest from Sue Erickson. She wants to be on the transient room tax again. So without any objection, I'd like to appoint her to continue on that board. Also, Gloria Ulmer has put in her letter of interest to remain on the Transient Room Tax Committee. I guess it's not a board, the committee. So without any objection, I'd like to appoint her to that, to stay on that position, in that position. Another item on the mayor's report today is notice of precinct boundary changes. On July 14th, 2013, the Alaska Redistricting Board adopted new boundaries for the Alaska Legislative House and Senate districts. Although the Division of Elections is not involved in the redistricting process, we do make adjustments to the boundaries of existing voting precincts if the precinct boundary is affected by a change to the legislative district boundary. The division has recently finalized the adjustments to the precinct boundaries in those areas affected by legislative district boundary changes made by the Alaska Redistricting Board and have adopted proposed regulations. Although many of the precinct boundaries in the state did not change, the House district number and precinct numbers were changed due to the redistricting process. The proposed regulations provide a description of all voting precinct boundaries in the state. The proposed regulations and maps of the precincts are posted on the division's website. The public comment period for the proposed regulation is now open. Attached is the copy of the public notice for the proposed precinct boundary regulations. The public notice provides information on how to submit comments if you so desire. Once the public comment period is closed, the division will finalize and adopt the regulations. New voter identification cards listing the new district and precinct designations will be mailed to all registered voters in March. If you have any questions regarding the precinct boundaries, please contact the appropriate regional offices listed below. And if you're interested, you could get those addresses from the borough clerk. Also, just for a reminder, the filing of this year's APOC paperwork is due, I believe, by March 15th or 30th. I'm not sure if it's the end of the month or not. It's sometime in March, next month. And newly appointed people to certain elected positions need to file within 30 days. So there was a little bit of confusion over that with the Planning and Zoning Board a while back. So, and Steve and I, the manager and I, are going to Juneau next week to meet with representatives and lobby for projects for the borough. So far, our lobbyist has lined up. On Monday, we're going to meet with Jonathan Christ Tompkins, Kathy Munoz. Tuesday, we're going to meet with Michael Lushkin from the DOT, I believe. He's in the harbors, and see how things are progressing with the harbors that are within our borough. Then we're going to meet with Senator Egan. Randy Ruero from the governor's office and Senator Kevin Meyer. We don't have appointments yet with Senator Burt Stedman or Peggy Wilson, but those are being firmed up. And just to let the assembly know, I've been invited to testify to the Fisheries Committee effect of sea otters on Southeast fisheries. I know this assembly hasn't taken any formal vote on anybody supporting the borough in that capacity, so I'm just going to say I'm representing myself. So just so there's no conflict, I don't intend to do anything fancy. I'm just going to give them my twist on what I think the otter population is doing. I'm getting information emailed to me from Phil Doherty from SARFDA, Southeast Alaska Dive Association. And he was just there 10 days ago doing the same thing. So I don't know if it'll have any impact, but I feel it's worth doing. So if that's okay with the assembly, I will testify it. That is Thursday at 10 o'clock. And I believe that's it. Steve, you don't have a report?
Not this one. Sorry about that.
It's okay. So,
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I was wondering on that otter, and this may be inappropriate because that's what I usually say, but is would it be possible if the others were thinking that it is a huge problem of looking at declaring it a disaster area in some of the waters?
I could bring that up. I'm sure there will be people. I know there's going to be people from the Department of Fish and Game there at the committee hearing. I don't know who will be there, but something needs to happen. Just from talking with a local fisherman, he's also a native and can harvest the sea otters. He's been hunting otters this winter south of town. And from Point Mitchell was where you go behind Level Island and come out into Sumner Straits, up into Duncan Canal. He figures there's between 400 and 500 otters there.
Right.
And they get into Duncan Canal. In my opinion, that's one of the best Dungeness resources left. It's right. Going to be a matter of a couple of years, and that might not be.
Right. Yeah, they're on the doorstep.
Yeah, so I think it's something we need to keep working on. So. Senator Egan's office, Jesse Keel, lined that up. I mentioned it to him the other day. Next thing you know, I get a call, and he's got me in front of a committee, so we'll see how that goes. Bob?
While you're on that subject, the otters are definitely moving in. I've had at least four or five of the crabbers that's been down on the south end tell me that there's essentially no crab outside of Duncan now. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, looking at where the pots are placed and so forth, and I believe that, and yes, I've seen quite an increase in the population inside the canal now.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's happening. I just want to keep reminding them that they need to be aware that there's potential loss of a $30 million industry between the dive fisheries and the Dungeness fisheries and other fisheries in this area, and it's, I don't know what they plan on doing to replace that economy to our area. Jody, did you have something you wanted to?
This is on a totally different topic, so if you're done with that one, then.
That's right. I was supposed to say something about the Board of Equalization.
We need to schedule the date for the first Board of Equalization meeting. Property assessments go out on February 28th, and on those notices, it needs to have on there what date the Board of Equalization is actually going to meet. Training for the Board of Equalization is going to happen on March 17th. I believe the assembly meeting is just going to start a little earlier at 6, unless the assembly would like to meet earlier in the day or on March 18th during the day. But as far as the actual hearings go, we were hoping to do it on April 2nd at 3 p.m. And I was just wondering if everyone could make it, and if that was okay, or if a different day that week would work better for everyone, or time.
You mean in April for the
For the BOE
hearing.
Yeah.
I won't be
here. It probably will take a couple days, so I don't really want to have it on a Friday, because
then we
might come in on Saturday or have to wait until the following Monday. So Wednesday, I was talking to the Wrangell borough manager, and he said that when they formed a borough, they had over 200 appeals, and most of them were corrected or figured out before the hearing, and probably 20 or 30 people went to the BOE. So
yeah, it is good to have that little
training
beforehand. So
yes.
I'll be here for that. And
okay.
Maybe we could start the assembly meeting at 6. Does that work for everybody?
For the 17th, for the training.
Does it take more than an hour, do you think, Jody? I can't remember it.
I think it was about an hour.
Yeah.
And if there's a lot of questions, though, that may be a little longer. So.
Well, maybe we could take that into consideration when we're drafting that agenda and not get it too loaded up with other stuff. Because, yeah, that's going to be very busy, I think, when the people get their first assessments of their properties and, you know, in the new borough area. So generally, they get solved with between the assessor and the appellants, but you never know. So
yep.
Does that work for everybody else, the 17th at 6? Okay, the clerk will advertise it such.
And then the April 2nd for the hearings, does that work for everyone?
That works for me. I might be able to call in, so if you, you know, I'll be out herring fishing, but I could get an email and could try my new headphones, see how they work.
What time?
What time?
Well, we're thinking 3, but it could be any time. It could be 9 a.m.
Well, if it goes 2 days, about 3 hours or something like that would probably be enough. So could it be from 3 to 6? Do you want to start at 2 or 2 to 5? Or
how about 9 to noon?
I'm up at 4 in the morning. How about we do it then?
I would opt for earlier in the day, particularly if people are outside of town having to come in rather than later in the day.
Good idea. Yeah, we're getting a little more daylight now.
So 9 a.m., should we say?
Sounds good to me.
On the 2nd? Okay, great. Thank you.
Pretty agreeable bunch here today.
May I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
I understand Jody's going to put some articles in or notices in the paper on it. It's what she's told me, and I think that's a good idea. But we also need to make sure that people know that they need to make contact. My other concern is that you'll have a lot of the lots in the places outside of town. People will either be out of town or someplace. So I think we need to have provisions to make sure that they can call in at the same time, you know, or at least have some way to make known their interest or their concerns.
Makes sense. Thanks, Jody, for reminding me of that. I obviously didn't find that little note again. Unfinished business. That brings us to the first thing on that is ordinances for third and final reading. Ordinance 2014-1, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.50, Hospital Board of the Municipal Code, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation and providing provisions for the Hospital Board for the borough, third and final reading. The ordinance was amended after its first reading to repeat the charter requirement that the hospital board prepare, adopt, and submit to the borough a 6-year capital project improvements plan for equipment and buildings along with its annual budget. I would entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its third and final reading.
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Logadakis to adopt ordinance 2014-01 in its third and final reading. Discussion? And Mr. Haverlick?
Mr. Mayor, I'm fine with the ordinance now. The thing is, in the future, if we put the hospital is receiving tax funds, I would like to look back at the ordinance so that we have some input into looking over being part of their fiscal decisions. But I'm fine with this now.
Any other discussion?
Doesn't it say in here that the hospital will operate on funds that are that it earns itself somewhere? I had it marked, but not highlighted.
I think that they haven't asked for borough money in the past, except for capital projects or support on capital projects for them. But it has been talked about that they might be coming to the assembly for money. And I agree with Mr. Haverlick. If they do, we need to have a little bit more control over on how that money is spent. In fact, the finance director feels the same way. And what were you going to say, Nancy? Now
is it greatest possible autonomy? They need to, and it says it specifies in here that they earn their own money.
Yeah, in the charter. But I wouldn't be surprised if they ask. So then we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there, but that's not currently the situation. Any more discussion on ordinance 2014-1? Will clerk call the roll?
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2014-01 passes unanimously in its third and final reading. Okay, now we're on to ordinances for second reading. And the first ordinance there is ordinance 2014-04, an ordinance providing for Title II, elections of the municipal code and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. This is the second reading. The ordinance retains all processes and functions for in-person voting that our residents are accustomed to. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its second reading.
So move.
Second.
Been moved by Member Havlick, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt ordinance 2014-04 in its second reading. Discussion? Seeing none, will clerk call the roll?
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2014-04 passes unanimously in its second reading. That brings us to the second reading for ordinance 2014-05, an ordinance providing for Title X, Criminal Code, of the Municipal Code and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. This ordinance has been revised to remove outdated and unused portions of the previous code. Also, portions of the code have been updated to allow the police department to process minor crimes as borough ordinance violations. Under this revision, officers would have the discretion to issue a borough citation in lieu of arrest for common offenses. Allowing for the disposition of cases in this matter will provide defendants with a speedier process and will reduce the amount of police prosecutor and court resources needed to process what were traditionally criminal cases. Nothing in this revision prevents officers from making physical arrest and processing criminal violations in the current manner. Other revisions include the adoptions of current state watercraft statutes, similar to the borough's previous adoption of traffic administrative codes and statutes. So I would entertain a motion to adopt 2014-05 in its second reading.
So move.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Havlick, seconded by Member Loggadakis to adopt 2014-05 in its second reading. Discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, it passes unanimously. Okay, next item up for discussion is Resolution 2014-03, a resolution in support of City and Borough of Wrangell Resolution Number 12-13-1290, recommending the operations and management of the Tyee Hydroelectric Project be transferred from Thomas Bay Power Authority, otherwise known as TBPA, to Southeast Alaska Power Authority, SEPA. On February 6, 2014, the manager and I met with Wrangell manager Jeff Jaybush to discuss the next steps in transfer of the Tyee hydroelectric facility operation and management duties from TBPA to SEPA. Resolution 2014-04 supports Wrangell's resolution in its entirety. And I believe the Wrangell Assembly is waiting to see the action we take. But it sounds like they have enough support from their assembly to move this forward. I think it's five members in pretty much in favor of it. So anyway, I'd entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 2014-03.
So move.
Second.
Been moved by Member Walhooter, seconded by Member Haverlick to adopt Resolution 2014-03. Discussion?
I had one question of Jody. When we passed the resolution last year not to pay the $50,000, did we include that $50,000 in our budget this year? because I believe this resolution is going to obligate us to pay that money this time.
Jody, would you like me to speak to it?
Please.
No, it's not currently budgeted. One of the things that we do have, though, is a Jeff J. Bush recommended or brought it to our attention. We have a $50,000 deposit with the city and borough of Wrangell that's been sitting out there for numerous years that was back in the days to help their cash flow related to them processing payroll for the Thomas Bay employees. So we're going to, the plan is to use that deposit, which has been sitting there for many years, to fund this portion.
We'll have to come back. We've discussed that with Wrangell, or is this a new proposal to them?
We discussed it with their manager, and if it's something we'll have to take assembly action on, I would imagine.
Correct, okay. Exactly. It'll still have to come back to the assembly to approve that, but that's where the source of the funds is we're looking for.
It'll be interesting to see SEPA's response to both boroughs unifying with the resolution together and saying, well, we accept your offer, and see if they were, how serious they were about it. You know, it sounds like they are. So, and then we'll see what little provisions are in there, if everybody could be happy with it. But this money wasn't spent, but it's been sitting in their bank account for, I can't remember how many years. It's been a
lot of years.
So, which was pretty good news.
But to Cindy, to your point, yes, it'll still have to come back to the assembly as a budget amendment, you know, at that point.
So yeah, this resolution is just to support theirs, and I believe, didn't you send everybody a copy that day after we got done talking with Jeff? So Jay hasn't had a chance to read it, but it's personally think it's the right move. So, any more discussion on resolution 2014-03? John?
Mr. Murray, I just had two questions, and maybe I'd send them to Steve. One was that Wrangell's resolution said that SEPA would have to take these present employees for 2 years. And it seems like there should be a caveat in there saying if, you know, the SEPA would have to take them for 2 years, I understand that and I'm comfortable with that, but saying that they have to at least meet standards. I'd hate to have someone tell me that I'm going to have to take your employees and they can do whatever they want whenever they want, and basically we're saying guaranteeing a job with no conditions. And the other was there a sort of an end date where you thought this might happen? Was that discussed with the manager?
Were we talking May, June?
Okay. June of this year.
Okay, good.
That sounds good.
If that
conversation between
right.
The three of us, but
okay.
That was the date that the Wrangell manager mentioned to us.
Yeah, so I guess the only concern was the putting in that, you know, that small part that if the employee meets standards.
Yeah, you know, I feel there's going to be some give and take through this process, probably, if it's anything like the restructuring of the four dam pool.
Sure.
Bob?
Steve, let me clarify that. You're saying the transfer would occur, you're thinking, as of June or thereabouts?
That's what the Wrangell manager said, is that they felt that it could happen that quickly.
Okay.
I want to hesitate here. That's probably entirely up to SEPA. They may get this resolution, joint resolution, and have additional things that we haven't thought of or have changed their mind, and we're back to square one. We don't know that.
So it was a positive meeting, though, with Mr. J. Bush, so
awesome.
That was good. Any more discussion on resolution 2014-03? Clerk, call the roll, please.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Gert?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2014-03 passes unanimously. Now we're going to have a presentation and a cost estimate given to us by Corey Wall from MRV Architects. The proposed design for the renovation of the municipal building to include the police, finance, administration, and the community development departments. So,
Mr. Mayor, if I may
add
something. After the presentation, what I'd like to ask the assembly is we're looking for your blessing to submit this project to the legislature and say, this is going to be our new facility. And as part of that, I, you know, I want your blessing in the sense that we can continue moving forward on this project. But we don't have the money for the full construction. We do have plenty of money to continue pushing forward on the design process, you know, basically moving the project to, you know, maybe an overused term, but shovel-ready status, so that when the construction money's available, we're ready to move. So as you listen to, you know, Corey and Bill and Greg's presentation, I'd like to keep that in mind, ask the questions that you think you need to know. Mm-hmm. But it would help us a lot if we had the assembly's blessing to kind of keep moving this project forward.
Okay, so with that being said, maybe after the presentation, we will entertain a motion to do what the manager's requesting. And that's the reason we scheduled the meeting for today instead of this coming Monday, so we'd have the information to take to the legislature next week. So anyway, thanks, Corey, for being here.
Well, thank you guys for scheduling this special meeting to coordinate with our cost estimating process. So that was very helpful. So I'm Corey Wall with MRV Architects out of Juneau. And here, as part of our team, is Bill Rutherford and Greg Kelly from Clemens Rutherford and Associates from Tallahassee. They're nationally recognized public safety expert architects. Oh. Boy, there's a lot of omens about this presentation. I'm nervous. So they're here to specifically talk with the police folks about the police station design, but they certainly are available for any questions if we want to get into the nitty-gritty of some of the police station aspects. But I'm just going to go ahead and give a brief presentation about where we've been and where we are with this project. So I have a packet with just some outlines of, first of all, just a history of the process so far. MRV responded to an RFP put out by the borough back late August, I think, or July of last year, specifically to do facilities analysis to determine whether or not they would be suitable for use as a new public or a renovated facility for to house the Petersburg Police Department. As part of that, our structural engineers, BBFM, came up and analyzed a couple of facilities, including this one, to determine whether or not they were structurally sound and could be made to house a public safety critical facility. Won't talk about the other facilities analyzed, but this facility basically passed the sniff test, and that was a surprise to a lot of people in town. So I just wanted to talk about that very quickly. The frame of the building, the steel frame supported by the concrete perimeter, was determined to be in great shape. The slab, which I think everybody notices right away walking into the police station, has dipped down and gives an impression that the building is basically falling apart. And that's not accurate. The slab in the police department was never meant to support the framing of the second floor of the police station that was put on it at a later date, and that's why it's starting to subside. So that slab needs to be removed, but our structural engineer determined that basically the rest of the building was sound and did need some upgrades to be brought up to current structural standards to house a public safety facility, but it passed that initial test. So at that point then, MRV and CRA were asked to determine whether or not the building could physically house the police station and municipal office needs. So we put together a space program identifying all the needs for the police department based on the new standalone facility that had been developed back in 2013. So we took those same spaces that were part of that facility and determined whether or not they could fit here, and then analyzed the municipal offices to see whether or not they could also be housed in the same facility. And the answer was yes, although it was tight. Basically, we had just enough space within the existing facility to fit both of those needs, but we put an asterisk by it because we didn't know whether or not it would work. It worked numerically, but we wanted to prove that out. So then we proceeded into conceptual design, where CRA and MRV started to sketch out floor plans to start to put the pieces together inside the existing framework or inside the existing envelope to see if they would fit. And we started to come up with some options. We did some back and forth with the police department. We came in January to present those options, refined them down to a direction, and then have proceeded into schematic design to solidify that and start to get the engineers involved with defining exactly what was going to be required to renovate the building so that we could get the cost estimate of what it was going to cost to renovate it, which brings me to today's presentation. So that's kind of a history. We've been working on it since August. The design, if you were going to take this all the way through, ready to be finished, we're about 15% of the way done of what it would take to finish this up, put it on the street, bid it, and construct it. So we had a couple of project goals that I just wanted to quickly go over for this project. And the first, and I think it's important to point this out, was that we wanted this to be an uncompromised police station. We didn't want to just cram this into an existing building simply because the borough owned it if it wasn't going to function absolutely as well as a new standalone facility would. And I think that CRA has been instrumental in helping us understand that indeed we can meet all of the needs within this building, in this location, with some reconfiguration and also some vehicular modifications to how the police vehicles get in and out of Nordic. And we wanted to also, so I just wanted to again emphasize that the rooms in the police station are the same size and have the same functions as they would have in a standalone facility. Just because they're in this building doesn't mean that we didn't use the same standards that we would have in a new facility. And then the spaces within the renovated facility also needed to have the same adjacencies to each other. Just because we're in an existing building didn't mean that we could have, for example, the person supervising the jail cells on the other side of the building from where the jail cells occurred. We had to make sure that the building would function just as well as it would as if we laid it out on a blank sheet of paper. And then all the spaces, technologies, and finishes meet the same best practices standards as a new facility. One of the things that's nice about this building is it is concrete frame around the majority of it, so it helps us with trying to secure or have a secure detention facility inside of it, so there are some advantages to that. And then finally, I just mentioned it briefly, but vehicular access is vital, particularly the idea of getting a sally port, an enclosed garage, basically, where police vehicles can come in with somebody who's being detained. You can secure that garage. You can move the detained person directly into the holding cells and into the secure facility inside the police station without having to walk through the outside or through a place that's not quite secured. That was instrumental. And as part of that, the vehicles need to be able to get in and get out in a straight direction without having to back out onto Nordic or do something with the traffic control on Nordic Drive. So those were kind of our standards that we tried to maintain as far as design went of the police station. And then secondarily, but also importantly, we looked at how the municipal offices would fit into the space. One thing that we recognized early on was that the municipal offices would shrink down from the area that they currently occupy, but we wanted to make sure that the sizes and spaces devoted to the municipal office would still meet best practice standards and would be equivalent or greater than equivalent facilities throughout our region. So we went back and we looked at how big an executive office should be, how big a workstation should be, but we didn't cut it down to the bones, even though it's a little bit smaller than some of the spaces that are currently in this building, just because they have the space to expand into them. And then one of the things that MRV specializes in is creating like new facilities out of renovated facilities. And it's always a little bit hard for people who are used to dealing with a building that's slightly run down, I mean, particularly on the police station side, to imagine that this building would be just like new when you're finished with the renovation. But our standard is, this building was constructed in 1958 and really has not had a comprehensive renovation since then. You put a new roof on in 2008, we've done some interior work at the police station, but you haven't had a comprehensive, you know, these are the windows that were put in 1958, for example. So the standard that we have when we do a renovation, a comprehensive renovation, is to provide a building just like that one was in 1958 that you're not going to have to think about for 30 or 40 years. So the finishes, all the piping, all the wiring, pretty much everything you can see is going to be completely like new, including the outside envelope. And then, but we also have some advantages, which is we get to keep structural items that are not at the end of their lifespan or you don't even really have a lifespan. We're not throwing those away and starting new again. So it's kind of the best of both worlds we've found. We've done this with a number of facilities, and what we found is that the trend is actually going towards renovation. Municipalities have a lot of inherent value inside existing buildings, and so we're starting to look at how can we renovate, retrofit them, provide a like-new facility where you don't have the expense of tearing down an existing one and then building new somewhere else. So I've put up the floor plans and a couple of renderings of the building. Again, we're only at 15% of the design process, so what you see here is certainly not carved in stone in any way. We still are going to have a lot of back and forth conversations with the police department, municipal offices, to refine what you see here. But we have a very good sense now of how the building is going to lay out, the general parameters of it, so that the cost estimate that we developed off of these is accurate enough to proceed. So a couple of highlights just looking at it. When you look at the rendering on the top shows the entrance basically from looking across the street as if you were like at the Scandia house looking across. So you see we've put a new front entry onto the building, a new canopy, and part of the reason for that is the old garage, the Motors garage, is going to be torn down, which allows for an expanded parking lot and a very efficient parking lot. We gain about 10 parking stalls going all the way from Nordic to Singley Alley. So very efficient, and it allows us to pull the parking a little bit away from the front of the building. So we've got, on that north side, we can have some landscaping area. We can continue the pathway. The sidewalk can continue on all the way to the intersection of Haugen and Nordic Drive. And we can set up a little bit more of a formal entry to the building, so it doesn't feel like it's just kind of forgotten along a parking lot. As part of that, we have a new entry that will be sort of a signature piece of the project. We needed to do that to pull the stairs out from the middle of the building where they are right now, the L-shaped stairs that really chop things up down on the first level in particular. And as I said, the area was fairly tight, so we needed to do that small addition to provide some efficiencies in the front, and also then sort of transforms the way the building looks. One thing that you'll notice right away is that we have metal siding around the building. Basically, what we've done is a similar thermal envelope to what was done at the library, where we're going to take this existing building, the concrete downstairs, and the framed walls upstairs. We're going to enclose the whole thing in essentially an igloo cooler, 4 inches of rigid foam insulation over the entire building to increase thermal performance. And then on top of that, we would put standoff on hat channels, but for drainage. But then we would have 50-year painted metal siding on the building. So a pretty bomb-proof, maintenance-free exterior to the building with a much upgraded thermal envelope. The aluminum windows that you see would be replaced by triple-paned windows in a fiberglass frame. Again, fairly maintenance-free and much increased thermal values from what you see here. As an alternate, we're also proposing adding some insulation to the roof. Even though it was redone recently, there's been so much research on the value of increased insulation that it may pay off for a life cycle to put another 6 inches of insulation on the roof. We've proposed that as an alternate. Then another highlight is low maintenance detention facilities. So the security area of the police station is going to be constructed with fully grouted CMU walls. Basically, we're going to do a concrete shell within the concrete shell to house the secure facilities. And then we've got pre-manufactured detention cells that will meet all of the requirements, so we don't have to worry about finding the right toilets or making sure that we don't have a weird angle where somebody could get up to some mischief. They're going to be prefabricated exactly to specifications by security experts, shipped here on a barge, and put right into place. And then some emphasis on efficient mechanical systems. One thing I wanted to point out is, of course, now the ventilation is not ideal in this facility, and it would be brought up to meet modern standards. As part of that, of course, we're going to be flushing a lot more cold exterior air through the building. It drastically improves living conditions and, you know, particularly in crowded rooms, like I can imagine this gets sometimes. But you do have energy loss with that because you're cycling cold air through a heated building. To offset that, like I said, we're going to do as much as we can with the thermal envelope of the building and then make sure that the mechanical systems are as efficient as possible. What we're proposing for the heat system is we'll pull out the oil tank, we'll pull out the old boiler, and of course abate all of the asbestos-covered pipes and everything else back in the boiler area. And we would go to an air source heat pump that would be located in a mechanical mezzanine, kind of hidden in some of the interstitial space. So as efficient of a mechanical system as we can get right now to provide heat. And then efficient electrical systems as well. We would go, as we did with the library, with almost entirely LED fixtures and then entirely new wiring systems. So maybe quickly I'll walk through the plans. Should I stay by the microphone?
You can move if you need to.
Well, I'll just kind of walk. Well, yeah. I didn't bring
There's
a laser pointer with me.
Corey,
is there? Well, yeah, maybe I could.
You'll probably take it right out of the stand, yeah.
Like a Okay, I'll see if I can do this. So, that might be as far as it goes. So again, the top drawing that you see there, the top image, that's the main entrance with the canopy that would come in. That door is the municipal office door. The police station door, for security reasons, is located down along Nordic, which you can see a little bit in the rendering down on that side. So I think what I'll do is I'll just quickly take you as if you had walked through the front of the building. This is the entry on the downstairs. We would have the PDC offices down right when you would first come in, so they can come right. Right now, this is where the front desk, the front reception is for the municipal offices, if you can picture that. So you'd come in, you'd have an easy in and out for this traffic that would be for people just coming to do PDC. All other municipal functions would head up the stairs, up our new stair tower, to this level. So you come up the stairs. The layout is very similar to what we did now. We're trying to preserve as much of the existing walls and certainly not do major exterior reconfigurations as possible. So you have a small lobby outside, right outside the doors here. The assembly chambers are located where they are right now and in the same size as they are right now. We would do a small addition to cut stairs down through the building to provide a code-compliant exit from the space, which is required a second exit. And then behind where the library is now, and including the PDC offices, would be the municipal offices, controlled by a front desk right outside the door here, and a new conference room, I guess right exactly where the PDC offices are now, the old conference room that for the library, which would allow breakout sessions from this if you want to do executive sessions. Now we have a space for that, as well as being dual function and functioning for the municipal offices for their meetings. So a nice interaction there. And then right beyond this wall, we would have a break room, again, functioning as a break room for the municipal offices, but also as a kitchen for after-hours functions happening here. So lockable from both sides, so accessible to the public or just to the municipal offices. We're moving over the community development department. So the two employees currently located in the public works facility would come over, and then all of the current employees downstairs are located in the old library space. Again, in efficient, but not by any means tiny or mean office facilities in there. So the private office is located along the roadside with then relights allowing natural daylight to come through to where the workstations are in the middle. We're gonna have occupancy sensors on the lights, so we're trying to use as much daylight as we can and not rely totally on artificial lights. So that's upstairs. The police department downstairs, which is really an interesting design challenge, trying to, as I said, get all the adjacencies to work with what is a very complex problem, actually. A small community detention center and community police department has as much design complications as I'm assured by our public safety experts as like a 250 person prison, because you still have to segregate different populations. If you have male prisoners and female prisoners, if you have juveniles in, you have to separate all those populations, and you've got to make sure that's not, it's very clear how that's closed off, and you've got, as I said, the access straight from the vehicles, and that's separate from where the people are working. So it's an interesting design challenge, and we've gone and done a lot of back and forth and are approaching, I think, something that the police department is happy with. So as I said, for this, you come down, we're gonna keep the canopies along Nordic, we're gonna enhance the canopies along the front so you can still, the public will park on this side, on the enhanced parking lot across the front. They would come in and then around the side of the building to an entrance off of Nordic, which would be more welcoming than it is now, but would still be in roughly the same location. Excuse me. Then directly inside, we would have a nice sized police lobby where you could imagine four people sitting, queuing up, waiting to use the Department of Motor Vehicles if that stays down as part of this, with a small visiting room so that visitors can look with a video link back to anybody being detained rather than having to go back through, and a small washroom as part of that. So that's sort of the yellow area at the very front. Behind that is, as you're used to now, the dispatch personnel and Department of Motor Vehicles functions happening right at a counter, with the main consoles being located sort of out of sight, off to the side. So rather than when you come in, having a direct line of sight straight to the person all the time, working dispatch, and then all the way back through to the holding cells, we're going to segregate that off so there's no visual link back through the building anymore. And if there's a problem happening at the police lobby, the dispatcher can get out of the way. This, again, as I mentioned before, is a CMU concrete grout-filled wall, so fairly robust, and then a bulletproof window. So just protecting what's happening behind. A controlled door right here, which then allows people, you know, you can be buzzed in through that door to get back to the offices happening back in this zone. Offices, again, along the windows as much as we can do it. The squad room where the officers have their workstations. Briefing room, functioning as a conference room and training room for the police department. And then the evidence and storage areas kind of in the heart of the building away from the windows. As I mentioned, one of the big things that we concentrated on doing was making sure we had that direct vehicular access from Nordic and through. I didn't provide, and I apologize, I should have brought up a better site plan, but the idea is that we have a similar site plan happening on the south side of the building as we do now, where we have parking against the building and we have parking against the slough. But what that allows us to do is pull into what's essentially a four-car garage and out and through the middle of that parking lot onto Nordic in the same way. So again, in from Nordic, you don't have to back out, then you loop around and through. And we're going to, right now, one of the difficulties we were having was that the exit from the police department lot is fairly close to the corner of the building, so visually it's obscured, and then the trees and the edge of the carport obscure it going southbound out of Nordic. So we're going to reorient that slightly so we have much better access and we pulled away from the corner. So again, just a much easier in and out for the emergency vehicles without having to control this intersection in any way. So a vehicle would pull in. Somebody who's being detained can be put right immediately into a holding cell in case they need to be have a little cooling down period, or you can exit into the pre-booking area happening up here. So this is where people can be, say, on a bench, use the phone, or then come down here and be booked. At this point, we have two segregated, completely segregated populations, so a larger area where we're anticipating, typically the males would be held, and then a smaller area where we could be holding juveniles and females, segregated, or in any way we can segregate four different populations this way. Maybe that's about it for the highlights of that, unless there are any specific questions while I'm over here looking at the design.
Any questions of Corey from the assembly members on the floor plans or design?
And I just want to, if I could, Mr. Mayor, sure. Just apologize to the assembly. We pushed this to the limit to get you this. This is, you know, we're asking you to make tough decisions in a very short period of time to meet with the legislative calendar. And, you know, it wasn't Corey's fault. I mean, these guys busted their tails to be able to get this. We were still doing design stuff, middle of last week?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Well, and if I could say one other thing about that. As I said, we're at 15%. So what we need to make sure is that, and I think that we are sure after talking with the stakeholders in this, that we don't have a big addition to what you're seeing here, that we don't have to bump this up, we don't have to tear down a big wall and expand out in order to meet the needs. But any interior reconfiguration, as long as we're not adding a bunch of things, is easily possible within this existing cost estimate. So,
Bob, did you have a question?
I've got three
sure.
questions. One, is there a reason you stuck with a flat roof on this building in Southeast rather than putting some kind of a dome on it of some sort?
Well, so a couple of things. There's a number of reasons. First of all, you've already paid for the structural deck here. So doing a new structure on top of it was something that we didn't even look at from budgetary concerns. And second, with the new roof that you have on here, even that is an alternate, so just resurfacing is not something we thought about. So,
okay. Second question, you didn't say anything about the electrical or the transmission for internet, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I assume that's all being redone?
Yep, absolutely. There will be no existing wires that remain in this building, just like there'll be no existing piping. It all comes out down to the shell and all gets put in brand new. So, and I can talk about that as much as you'd like. We're going to do a new service from the transformer that's right on the corner of the pathway in Singley Alley. That'll be the new service to the building, routed in, and then wireless access all around. We've got secure systems for the police department, and on and on. So, yes, it's all going to be brand new.
Okay. My last question is, how confident are you of your cost estimates?
Very. Yeah. So one of the reasons that we did this on this timeline was so that we could get this design done enough that it could go out and be professionally cost estimated by the team that we've been working with, HMS Incorporated out of Anchorage. They do all of our cost estimating. They've done all of our projects for years and years. They did the library. They've done very similar renovation projects throughout Southeast. So we're very confident, and one of the things that makes us even more confident is that we just got done with the library construction, so we know how that goes. You know, in a renovation, you're always a little bit nervous about what you'd get into, which is the one reason when I talk about the money in just a second, we'll talk about some of the contingency and things we have to cover concerns with that, but we're very confident.
Sandy, you got a question for
me? And it may be coming up in your presentation. I wanted to ask, because I don't see anything specifically dedicated, if the 911 system will still stay in this building. I know there's a redundancy up at the fire hall, but I don't see anything dedicated here. And the other part of that is making sure that that's especially safe from any, you know,
right,
fire, flood, earthquake. And the other part of my question was, will the work on the building, if we our fairy godmother blesses it, be staged, or
thank you,
will things be happening?
No, that's an
time?
Important question. So one of the things that you see here is this dividing line, right? That one, call it grid line 3. This is the existing police station. On that side of it, this is basically the empty fire hall right now, and then the municipal offices start right about here. This is Steve's current office happening here. So the idea is that on the first day of construction, people from here out would move out. The police station stays completely independent, and they stay in place the entire time. So we would have to find new housing for all the municipal offices, but the police station stays completely unhindered. For about 10 months, they demo and reconstruct this portion of the building. 10 months later, the police department moves out, moves into this portion of the building, the municipal offices move into the upstairs, and then demolition starts on this side. So one of the things that we really tried to do, that's one of the great things about, just one of the benefits of the plan just happened to be, was that this Sallyport in adjacent to the south parking lot allows this to become a garage, which of course takes a minimum amount of time to reconstruct. So that's terrific. So demo will happen in there, they'll pour the new slab to make up for the deficient one. We have a couple of storage rooms in the back and an entrance into pre-booking, but everything else is very simple and should be very quick.
So I have one follow-up question to that, and it's probably for you, Steve. It sounds like there would be an additional cost then to finding an alternative location, and I'm assuming that that's not included in your estimate.
No, it is. I'll get
is
to that.
It?
Yep,
okay.
I've got some of those. And so then let me talk to your questions a little bit about the 911 system. Yes, that will stay here, and again, you'll see that in the budget that
okay.
We have, a budget to redo a lot of that system, what needs to be, just because it's aging out. So it would be all new phones for both departments, and then the 911 system and a new police data and communication system would be part of it. And one thing you're not seeing here is a portion of this building gets another mezzanine. So just like when you walk into the fire department, there's that second floor hidden within the first floor. We would do another area up here for the mechanical system, the air pumps, and then also miscellaneous data and electrical systems if we needed it. So I didn't show that in any floor plan, but here's this little ship's ladder to get up to that little hidden spot
okay.
up above.
Any more questions of
Cord?
That part of it.
Very good.
Okay, the money.
So
I
got now we need to move on to the.
He can show you the money.
The nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
The deal breaker.
So then after the pretty
that.
Pictures, we get into the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah. So the first page, called Schematic Design Construction Cost Summary, is what we just got back from HMS the other day. So they took all of our drawings. They developed this document, 87 pages of takeoff, going into every bit. They counted every square foot of drywall. They counted every stud that was going to be needed, on and on. So 87 pages of stuff, which is distilled down into this summary page here. And basically, the bottom line is that it's exactly, and not accidentally, we targeted this, it's exactly the same construction price as the new standalone facility developed in 2013, $7.1 million construction cost. So for that's about $420 a square foot renovation, which is an expensive renovation because the security systems that we have are expensive, of course. For comparison purposes, the standalone library was $350 a square foot, totally new with all the site work. But again, for comparison purposes, the standalone building was $540 a square foot. So gives you a sense you're saving about $120 a square foot by using the existing building per square foot. So $7.1 million is the bottom line construction cost. And that doesn't include a couple of alternates that I talked about, redoing the roof, the front canopy, some landscaping, those sort of things. Things that we still hope could be put back into the project as it goes on if we get a good bid, or if things turn out less expensive than they look like they'd be right now. So then the second page is the project cost. So the first is just what we would expect a bid to come back at, what we would pay a contractor to build the new building, $7.1 million. This next page then delineates everything else. So, Cindy, you were asking about the you know, moving costs and all that sort of stuff. That's in here. Okay. So I think maybe, if you don't mind, I'll go through these line by line. Am I getting too long-winded? Is that okay?
No.
Okay. So we have the construction cost of 7.1, and if you have any questions about that first page, we can certainly go back and look at how that's broken out, but I don't know how helpful it is to see mechanical versus electrical costs, but
I just had one comment question. You're 423.52 for square foot. I'm assuming that the costs for working on the police station are higher per square foot than they would be
yes
in the business portion of it.
Correct.
So I'm just putting that out there, that to look at that number is a little deceptive.
It is. And one thing that's difficult about this is we didn't break them up into two separate projects, because essentially I don't believe we can do them as two separate projects. We don't have any room, and the mechanical systems, of course, bleed from one spot into the other. So trying to do this by just renovating the bottom floor and not doing the top seemed unworkable from a conceptual standpoint.
I just wanted to get that out
yeah.
there to the public,
no,
that they understood we're not building a palace. We're trying to take care of
it. No, absolutely,
places.
Absolutely. And, yeah, thank you. That's a good point. One last thing I should talk about on this page, just because we've already had a question about it, is that, so back on that first, the construction, or the schematic design construction cost summary. You see item 13, which is the estimator's contingency. He has a little bit over 10% that he's put into as a contingency on that. That is just HMS's way of covering everything that wasn't shown in our initial documentation. Again, we're only at 15% of the design, so we haven't defined everything at this point. I mean, for example, we haven't done a hazardous materials survey yet. That'll be in the next phase. So that 10% covers the unknowns that he had when he was developing the 87 pages of takeoffs, things that he just missed that we will put in and he will see in the next couple of phases. So that's just for him. And as we would go on, we will continue to get the project professionally cost estimated, and that contingency will go down with each phase and eventually go away. So there's no estimator's contingency at the end of the project. It'll just be a pure number. It's kind of complicated, but the reason that I'm saying that is because we have a construction contingency, which is the first line item of the project costs on the next page. So we have the estimator's contingency, which hopefully will guarantee us that we get a bid of $7.1 million. Once we've got that bid, there are still going to be unknown things that come up during construction, and doubly so with a renovation. So this 10% is to cover all those unknowns, that we open up a wall and, oh my gosh, we thought we could keep that wall, but it turns out there's a little bit of rot, or we discover that the slab is cracked more than we thought it was going to, so we needed to pour a topping coat over it, those sort of things. That's in that 10%. 10% is very typical for a renovation. On the library, I think we had more like 8%, and we didn't spend, I think, we hardly spent any of it on that project because it was new. And this one, 10% is what we would carry. Hopefully that money would not all be spent during construction, but it's there to make sure that the project goes smoothly. The next item is the design fees. So to take the project through the rest of bidding is about 11% of construction costs. Then we have an on-site construction representative. For those of you familiar with what happened with the library, that was Dan LaForce's job. So somebody that comes to town, watches the contractor every day, make sure that he's doing what the documents say. We will be assisting with that as the architect, but you know, we can't come down here all the time. We come down once or twice a month. And so this is the person who's there every day to answer questions and make sure that nothing is getting skimped on, takes pictures of everything, that kind of thing. Next is a small line item for some special inspections that need to happen. Because we don't have much structural work happening in the building, this is not a large line item, but this is engineers coming down and verifying that a concrete pour is done correctly or that a weld meets specifications. Permitting, this is to get through the state fire marshal and then also the fire alarm permitting that would need to happen from the state. Printing and advertising is just a small line item so we can put it in the papers for bidding purposes. Administrative costs, this kind of covers everything else. So if the borough has staff that's going to be billing some time to this project, if it's, you know, miscellaneous printing costs, that sort of thing, things that we haven't covered, just miscellaneous. Then furnishings, fixtures, and equipment, that's the new chairs, the new desks, the network switches, the wireless switches that will be part of that. That's all part of that line item.
If I may, Corey.
Please.
And we'll reuse what we can in this area, but you like take the municipal offices, for example. They shrink quite a bit, so you've got issues where existing desks may not be appropriate for, in other words, we need smaller desks. So, you know, and then the police department, their stuff's just frankly worn out. I mean, with a great degree of accuracy, I'd say pretty much everything in the police department, furniture, fixture-wise, has to be replaced.
Yeah.
So, but.
And just for comparison purposes, the library, we had the new shelving was part of this line item, but that was 4.5%. So that was new everything, because they needed new everything. So 2%, particularly for a complicated building, in our experience, is reasonable. Electrical service, this is what the power and light will charge for the new hookup at the property line. And data communication system service, same thing for the telephone and data lines. Voice over IP phone system, this will be the new phone system, including the handsets throughout the building, just purely for telephone calls. That's not the emergency system at all. 1% for art, because we have state funding, this is a requirement for the art. Moving expenses, so this is to move the borough offices out and move the police station over and move the borough offices back, which is fairly minor, so some of that, you know, hopefully can, as with the library, was some volunteer efforts on that. Rent, this is a guess. I've been working with Steve a little bit trying to figure out where we would house the municipal offices for the 10 to 12 months that we would need to. We're assuming that assembly meetings would happen or council meetings would happen at the library, and so we're just looking at housing the people, thinking 3,000 square feet would be plenty, so about a house, so we estimated $5,000 a month, including utilities, new phone system, and everything else we'd need to do on that. And then finally, we have the police data communication system for $500,000, so that's redoing, and Chief Kelly can talk more specifically about that. We've been working with a vendor trying to determine exactly what's needed. Some of the software has already been purchased. This is a lot of the hardware to totally upgrade the system to bring it up to modern standards. So that brings the total construction cost to 9.7, pardon me, total project cost, now I'm confusing them, to 9.7 million. And so I put this page in at the end just so people could, this is the, just for comparison purposes, this was the document that you got at the end of the standalone police station project back in March of 2013. And the only reason that I put this in here is I just wanted to point out that the construction costs are the same, but the total project costs are almost $700,000 more, largely because of the moving expenses, we have an additional 1% for FF&E because we felt in our experience that 1% for furnishings, fixtures, and equipment was too low, so we added a percentage to that, and then the new $500,000 for the police data and communication system. So again, construction is about the same for a building that's 4,000 square feet bigger than the other facility was, but your project costs are a little bit higher because we put more in on the project cost side. We believe that that's realistic. It's good. That's what it's going to take to get the project done completely and correctly, but that's the reason that you're seeing that increase in money for the total project costs. And with that, I believe I am done with everything I had prepared, so please ask any questions.
Any more questions of Corey Wall, MRB?
This meets all state requirements?
Yes. And in fact, there's been a lot of back and forth that CRA has done with and Chief Kelly as well, with calling the local state officials. So we have some questions. There appears to be a slight break between what the regulations exactly call for and what is common practice here. For example, there's a requirement for a recreation area outside of the detention area. I know that this was something that had been discussed a lot. It appears that most community detention facilities in Alaska are not providing it, but the regulations require it at a strict reading. So what we've done, I'll just point out quick. We've done a minimal space at the back of the garage that fulfills the letter of the law, if you want to use it for another purpose. It's there. So to answer your question, yes, we've done a lot of looking with it. That's one of the reasons that we've been very efficient with the detention blocks themselves, how big the cells are, and so that we're meeting the letter of the law to house the 12 prisoners that you're required to do for your state contract with a minimal amount of square footage and specialized facilities devoted to that area.
John?
I was wondering, with most projects, you have a leeway of 10-20% or whatever. If we weren't able to get the 9.7 together, is this buildable at a different cost? Or?
We'd have to go back and sharpen our pencils. I think some of the things that we'd immediately start to look at are the communication system, whether or not we could do that under a separate grant at a later time, mm-hmm. for example. And I think we just have to start to sharpen our pencils a little bit.
So, for the basic structure, what do you think it would run?
That'd be hard for me to say.
Okay.
You know, I think because we get into so many specialized systems right away, it's hard to say. You know, I think an obvious thing would be that we didn't do anything upstairs internally, that we would still do the shell, because the thermal envelope, we kind of into that anyway, but maybe we didn't build out everything in the top, but, you know, and then hope we did some internal reconfiguration later. That would be one way that jumps to the top of my mind. But I haven't really thought about it. So if that was, I guess what I would say is that if there was a budget imposed on the project that was lower than this cost estimate, we would have to sharpen our pencils and see what we could do.
Do you think there'd be much cost difference in the bids? It's like we just put out, North Harbor, they thought it was going to cost $9 and came in at $7.
Right.
Do you think there's that kind of leeway in a project like this, or no?
Always. You know, so what we do is, and HMS is constantly refining their numbers. Every time they have a bid project, they go back and refine the numbers and rethink their approach. They talk to the contractors so they can, you know, they're essentially trying to act as a contractor when they're developing these bids. But as you saw with your harbor, as you saw with the library, the only true cost estimate that you get is the bids, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you know how much a project is going to cost. So that's why we try to cover ourselves with contingencies and with alternates. So the goal right now, we have alternates that go higher than the construction costs. As we went on, we will also try to develop alternates that take us lower than. We try and get 10% on either side of our target bid so that if we get a good bid, we can award those alternates. If we get a bad bid, we can still have a project without awarding those alternates. So we're going to try and manage that as best we can. I will tell you that in my experience, things have really changed in the past 8 years. It used to be that every project was coming in high and we had to not get our alternates and scrap together to build the project. And lately it's been the opposite. So like you saw with the library, we were able to give every alternate to the project and still, throughout the project we had extra money that we could be applying to fixtures and furnishings there, which was very nice. But you never know. You just never know. And that's why we try and cover every possibility, because you never know how contractors are going to look at it. Are they going to be hungry at this time? We believe they will be. From everything that we're seeing around Southeast, it does not look like you're going to be competing with a lot of other major construction projects. But you never know. And I do have one last thing, actually. We can talk about schedule a little bit if there are no other questions about the money, but I don't want to short-circuit the money.
Any other questions about the dollar figure? Okay.
So the last little bit of this, the last little section of the executive summary on the second page is just next steps. So one thing I want to point out is the construction cost estimate is anticipating a spring 2015 bid. Right now they're saying it's about 3% escalation. Again, in our experience, that has been wildly varying, and in fact has been very stagnant for a couple of years, but again, you never know. For years, for example, when we did Thunder Mountain High School in Juneau, I think it was about 10% over a year. Wow. The wrong way. So you just never know what's going to happen economically. So 3% is what we're saying right now annually. So to hit that timing, let's just work backwards a little bit. The idea is that we want to bid this in right about now, a year from now, so that contractors can be getting everything together in the early spring and start the excavation, start the site work immediately during the best days of the summer, in early summer. So that's why we've got, if you look down here, the March, and this is basically March 1st, 2015, is our target to getting the bid awarded. That's optimal for construction, and it would save money over in the bid if we did that. So working back, it takes us about 7 months to do total design. So that would mean that the design for the next phase, DED, would start hopefully about July 1st. 3 months for that, we'd be complete with that in October 1st, 2014. Then it takes 3 months to bring the project to 95% bid ready. And then that's finished basically on February 1st, 2015. Hits the streets, bids come back in March 1st of 2015. And then we would have a 10-month, as I said, construction on phase one. That's done right in March when we shift things around. And then we have the rest of the summer for them to finish up the Sally Port and any exterior stuff. But you'd be out of the building for 10 months, moving back in by March 2016. And then the entire building finished by August of 2016.
Any more questions?
I could just have one about Alaska, reserved for Alaska contractors. Is there any portion of this that would fall under that?
Based on our current bid specifications on a project of this size, we do not have to give a local bidder preference.
Okay, any other questions of Corey? Thanks, Corey.
Yeah, thank you guys very much again. Appreciate the opportunity.
Was there anything going to be added to this, Steve?
Bill and Greg are our police experts, and we wanted them here in case people had detailed questions about that floor plan or anything else. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the mayor and I need the assembly permission to pitch this project to the legislature. We've been talking about it for a couple of years without this level of formality and price tag. We need to be able to say, this is the project we want to build, and we need the money, and please help us out. So it's, you know, I need the assembly to tell us, yes, we can pitch the project, and yes, in some sense, I can tell Corey, let's keep working on the design and do some of these things that we can get ourselves that much closer to ready. So.
We will be back next Friday in a week, so I guess Steve could email the assembly some kind of a feeling what went on in Juneau. I mean, we're meeting with the right people. Co-chair of Finance Committee, and can get a chance to go to the governor's office, and Kathy Munoz, who isn't our representative, but has expressed that she would do everything she can to help us, and I believe she's on a House Finance. So tight budget up there this year, though, so we'll just do what we can do and see what happens. I've got a question, I guess, for the